Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Gig Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way of getting the show, which is on the iTunes search engine. Just enter Warman Kick Fighting Show or Lord Gaul, and my podcast pops right up. Also, for the Twitter followers, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. So I'll get into it. First and foremost, I want to apologize. I just had my wisdom teeth removed, so my cheeks are swollen, and I have no idea how clear this is coming in, so I hope it's coming in clear. I'm going to go ahead and break down two cards, and then I'm going to go ahead and do a preview for the K1 card going on tonight. Again, please forgive me if it's coming in unclear and so on, but I was like, man, I need to get a show out to the people. I'm sitting here waiting for swelling to come down, and hopefully I come in clear enough. So we'll go ahead, jump to the glory card. We'll go top to bottom. And still, Nikki Holtzkin wins your K1, or excuse me, it's still your glory 29 champion. I said K1 because it's still stuck in my head. It's still your glory welterweight champion as he gets a 5-round decision over Johan Kangulo. Interesting fight. First of all, both guys fought extremely well and showed a lot of skill set. The biggest improvement on Nikki Holtzkin over the years that a lot of people aren't, you know, if you're new to Nikki Holtzkin, if you've just seen him in this stellar run that he's had, you wouldn't know that once upon a time, his problem used to be activity. Like, he used to wait so much on counters that he wouldn't let his offense go enough. So if you look at, like, his fights with Bukau when he fought in K1, like, most people don't know that Nikki Holtzkin, once upon a time, he fought in K1, and the K1 Max, when, you know, Max was the it thing, he fought for them back in the day. And he had two tough draws. I think the draw that it was his best was he got Shahid El-Haj. But other than that, he got Bukau twice. And in both of those fights, he just didn't give enough offense to win the fight. And then Artur Kashenko, another one of the better fighters on the planet. Artur Kashenko, when he met Nikki Holtzkin, same thing. Scored offense here and there, looked for counter shots pretty much the whole fight, while Kashenko just outscored him. So as he's turned himself into one of the best fighters on the planet, if not the best fighter on the planet, the biggest thing is how much he fills gaps, how much he's consistent with some sort of strike. Teep, inside leg, outside leg, 1-2, just something to fill the gap. Johan Kangulo was game. He came with some really good offense. I want to say the second or third round, I'm trying to remember correctly, was a clear round for Johan Kangulo. Like, he just bit down in the mouthpiece and was like, all right, let's go. He threw good combinations. He walked Nikki Holtzkin down. Nikki Holtzkin found himself behind the ear muscle a little bit too much. Nikki did some subtle things, like he had a steady body kick, and I knew when he started scoring to the body kick, I was like, he's going to look to invest his body shot down the road. He didn't go ahead and go that normal shot that we're used to where he comes behind the elbow or when he catches you in the body as you're leaving. Nikki didn't go to that early. He stayed with body kicks and he stayed with combinations and kicks and single kicks, and he played a distance game. Johan Kangulo would just every once in a while power up, let the hands go big, and then every once in a while play with combinations and low kicks. I want to say it was the third round. Well, that was the round where Johan Kangulo clearly had his best round, where he put everything together. He also got a spinning back kick that he landed on Nikki Holtzkin. Nikki Holtzkin went backwards and fell on his butt. Some people were upset on whether or not this should have been called a down. So a little bit of controversy. It was not called a down. When I first saw it happen, the first thing I thought was it could have been called a down. Like, it was clear that that could have been the case. But the reason why I didn't call it that, it's another fight that I'm going to bring up in a little bit, is when Raymond Daniels scored a spinning back kick, guys usually go down, like, vertical. Like they go, instead of going up, they just go straight down. Like, they're standing upright, and they go straight down. You know what I'm saying? They go up and down. That's usually what happens if you score that body kick the right way. If you score it more like a big teep or like a kick that blasts someone away, their posture goes backwards. They go horizontal. They fly away from you. So in this case, it was clear that Nikki Holtzkin, he took the shot and he went away. The shot scored, but it might push his body off balance. He got up rather quickly and he was back to work right afterwards. I think more than anything, he was almost like embarrassed that kind of shot scored and you know, knocked him down in such a way. Whereas he had several fights with, you know, Raymond Daniels, and Raymond Daniels didn't score it in that such a way, not that much. Though they did give Raymond credit for one down in that way, if I'm remembering correctly. But Other than that, Nikki Holtzkin, the thing that I liked the most about this fight was rounds 4 and 5, which are supposed to be your championship rounds. Those are the rounds where if you're the better fighter, you got to take over the fight. And I thought it was so clear that Nikki Holtzkin brought the heat in those rounds. The body shot, he kept setting it up with the kicks earlier. He went to work. He started finding his rips around the elbow. All of a sudden, Johan Gangulo, who was so game in the first 3 rounds, despite I still had him, you know, losing 4 of the 5 rounds, he was game early. And late, he was kind of more behind the earmuffs, looking for his spots, always off balance, never comfortable. I just thought that it was just a great job by Nikki Holtzkin. So, what's next for the champion? First things first, he immediately brought up the Joseph Antolini fight. You know, like Joseph Antolini said, what's next for you? And he said, you. He said, you're next for me. And I thought it was really cool. I thought that he didn't mean it in an insulting way. He was like, hey, you know, get better and so on, but you're the guy that I want to fight. Nikki Holtzkin, I hope he does them both. I hope he keeps doing boxing and kickboxing, just keeps himself busy all year round, keeps growing. And I really, really like his skill set. Fun to watch. Glad that he had an entertaining kickboxing bout in, and still, as they say. Next, I'm going to go to Shahir Adamchuk as he gets a victory over Muhammad Elmir. Muhammad Elmir had a tough task as he was originally supposed to go against Nicholas Larson. Shahir Adamchuk, once he was subbed in, I was like, man, Muhammad, there are some guys that you can beat. Savvy guys are tough for you. And Shahir Adamchuk was just too savvy. He's just too slick with his 3-2, too slick with his combinations to low kicks. Elmir was hurting both legs, and it was clear that you know, Adamchuk, that was the game plan going in, because you could hear Big Mike yelling it from the outside, back to the legs, back to the low kicks. Whenever he talks to somebody who's of a different language, he just, like, yells simple instructions a lot. But this time, it worked perfectly. Adamchuk just wants to, he said he's living his dream, he just wants to keep fighting. Muhammad Elmir, you know, it was in Sweden. He was a beloved hometown figure. Him versus Larson probably would have been better for the fans because, you know, they wanted a little piece of their hometown guy having some success. But this was just, Larson would have been tough for Elmir. Adamchuk, even though smaller, was even tougher. Just too slick, too skilled. I mean, his pullback game, his 3-2, the way he finds his range on his left hand, he does what they call crashing. Tyron Smong's also really good at crashing. They're people who can throw a shot inside of your shots. Like, they'll sell out on a shot right in the middle of your combination. So here, Adamchuk does a good job of that. His slight angles, just his ability to just get that low kick going inside leg, outside leg, rear leg outside leg, rear leg inside leg, wherever you want it, he can do it. So here, Adamchuk put on a great performance, and he's a champion of his weight class. So clearly what's next for him is, whoever they got, you know, like anybody they bring around. Clearly, I'm hoping that he gets another opportunity to go over K1 because I just feel like they're deeper in that weight class. But when you're the champ, Glory, they can bring in somebody easy. There are so many people all over the world that they can bring in for Shahir Adamchuk. Plus, they've got a stable of guys who they're trying to groom. So we'll see what comes from that. But Shahir Adamchuk gets the victory. We go to the tournament. The tournament went to chalk for me. Jafar Wilnes gets a victory over Kirill Kornilov. Kornilov just too stiff, too nervous, I felt. I ever see Jafar Wilnes fight, he's the same fighter. No matter what the intensity of the fight is, he fights at the same pace. Keeps the guard up, combination, low kick, combination, low kick. Kirill Kornilov was backed up, couldn't get comfortable, couldn't find range. Wilnes doesn't have KO pop, but he was able to land a lot of clean offense. Clear victory for Jafar Wilnes, who moved on. Ishmael Lant against Anderson Broderick Silva. Ishmael Lant, again, he played with the combinations somewhat, but Anderson Broderick Silva better there. I thought the difference in this fight would be Ishmael Lant at some period of time would take advantage of Anderson Silva's jaw. And in the third round, that happened. He was able to score something big upstairs, big right hand drop Silva. Silva was, I'd say he probably lost the first round too, so you add that, all 3 cards went to Ishmael Lant. Anderson Broderick Silva is a good kickboxer, and there's a lot of guys that he can beat. Ishmael Lant is one of those guys. The right kind of day, he can outscore Ishmael Lant. But today, Ishmael Lant put it together, had the big offense when he needed it. He moves on. Excuse me. He moves on in the tournament. The tournament final went, I thought Ishmael Lant would win it. But I thought he'd score something to score down into Jafar Wilnes because Wilnes has got that slow pace. Ishmael Lant came out dedicated to scoring combinations and low kicks all around. He was dedicated to beating Jafar Wellness at Jafar Wellness. Was not expecting that at all. First round, I couldn't believe how many combinations to low kicks he had scored. He was so loud on him. Didn't care. So loud on him. Jafar Wellness, tough guy. He's got good low kick endurance. He started to fight back, but he had dropped the first round. Second round, good back and forth. Good fight because both guys were still technical even though they were tired, so like the combination still came relatively smoothly even though the pace and the effect of them wasn't the same. I leaned towards Wellness in round two, and then Ishmael Alant just kind of stepped in the gas for at least the first 2 minutes of the third round. Ishmael Alant wins split decision. It was great because they publicized that they had signed Ishmael Alant. And then Ishmael Alant goes out and wins the heavyweight tournament, and he's going to fight Rico Verhaeven. That's a win for the Glory brand. You got to have it string together like that. Like, that is your goal. Your goal is, this is my next big thing. Next big thing gets himself in the title picture. That's, you can't beat that. So good stuff there. Ishmael Alant, he needs to do his entrance all the way. Go ahead and Google our YouTube Ishmael Alant entrance when he fought for Super Combat. And I'm telling you, it's just, there's a cool little dance to it. Like, he does the thing where he spins around and he, you know, touches the ground with his fist and he comes up. It's a cool little dance. He had to shorten it up for Glory for whatever reason. I think they should have just let him do his thing. It was a lot of fun. So that was your main card. Your undercard, I won't talk about all the fights. I'll talk about the three main ones. I'll talk about four. Zach Mikasa against Zinedine here, Lane just didn't have the firepower to keep Mikasa off of him. He actually scored okay in moments, but Zach Mikasa is just so big and strong. There are points during the fight where he's like literally in club position, one hand down, just throws the other hand as hard as he can. Like, just, it's not clean or smooth. He just knows that he's a bigger, stronger guy. Zinedine pretty much gave up round one, letting Zach Mikasa walk him down and score body rips. Zach Mikasa threw his best combination of low kick I'd ever seen in the second round, where he put together a really good series of like maybe four punches that dropped with a low kick. And I was like, okay, the Hammers Gym work is going to show up for him. And then he went back to his clubbing ways. Lane scored good in moments, good combinations in low kicks and so on. The bigger, stronger guy just kept walking through it. Didn't matter. Just kept pushing. So shout out to Zach Mikasa, who, I mean, he had this really motivational interview where he talked about his life and how, where his name came from, because his mom had a dream that she'd met a guy named Zachary at a grocery store who helped her bring home her groceries, and the fact that she wasn't supposed to have children anymore. And then he talked about how he'd already been in fights his whole life, and he just, like it was moving stuff. Like, I saw a whole bunch of people all over my Facebook wall posting just his interview. So you need people that you remember. And this was really good stuff by Zach Mikasa. I'm hoping to get more of him down the road. Still developing his brand. He needs more fights like Lane. He needs more guys where he can just get better as a kickboxer. Thomas Mosny gets a victory over Shahad Kapanek. Mosny, this fight was a fight of, saw one for Mosny, but these guys were both kind of in a place where it's like, all right, I need to see more of you before I can make any sort of assessment. I just wasn't sold off of what I saw initially, you know, but like, as far as beating long-term, you know, big-time competition down the road, but still thought it was solid work. Extra round win for Mosny. Miran Zangana and Jonathan Oliveira had one of the weirder fights because the ref was calling the weirdest downs ever. And they were so clear from my eye, some of them, two of them by both guys, where the hand was on top of the head, and he just pulled him on the ground, and the ref just came in and called it a down. And I was like, wow, you know, hopefully he gets better here. And he didn't get better there. That was the weirdest thing. Like, the ref didn't improve in those areas. He continued to call the same things downs. The fight was ending in the third round with Jonathan Oliveira. It was probably fine. Probably fine, good to keep going. But just questionable down. It was the ref stayed consistently bad the whole fight. To this ref's credit, I can't think of his name, he returned to having a better night later on. Like he had a couple other fights. He reffed them fine. But this was a rough go. And I thought Zangana was winning, so I didn't go too crazy. But I can see how Oliveira and his people were upset by what went down there. Abur Karim Chor gets a decision over Rassam Mahareb. I thought that Chor did a good job scoring consistent offense for two rounds. Third round, Mahareb's trying to get himself back into it. It's the most Superman punches you're ever going to see in your life, as Mahareb just kept every time he would try to go into an exchange of punches, he would just Superman across the ring and just get himself in a position to exchange. Unfortunately, he was way too down and he was eating way too many shots. It's one of those things where it's like, hey man, if that's your shot, you got to hide your shot. You can't just do it as the first move like 20 times in a row. It's never going to land. So Chor gets the victory there. And then the last fight on the card, this one was kind of heartbreaking for me. Heartbreaking not because Hiroki Gagarin beat Maximo Suarez. I'm high on both guys. Maximo Suarez has got a beautiful kickboxing style. Glory, you got to use him all the time. Got to use him 4 times this year. He's excited. Hiroki Gagarin, you got to use him all the time. I was heartbroken because everybody saw this fight. It's the one that I was most hyping. I said, if you watch this thing, this is what the best fight on the card is. Like, it's going to be the most entertaining fight in the card. And for 2.5 minutes, or however long it lasted, it was combination kicks at its highest. And then Hiroki Gagarin scores a big shot. And then as Maximo Suarez is going down, Gagarin also got in a teep to the face. Brutal stuff. But I'm telling you, his body's like almost down on the mat before he takes it. And it ends the fight. I felt like the fans were kind of robbed from what could have been even greater. You know, like, it just, there's nothing you can do about it, but it could have been cooler. I would have liked for this stoppage to have happened at the end of the third than at the end of the first, just because I wanted people to see more of what high-level kickboxing looks like in its purest, most beautiful form. And Maximo Suarez and Hiroki Gagarin, they are the styles to show that. So, good stuff, good card. Glory, of course, is back in May, and they're in the States this time, so should be a lot of fun. I enjoyed the card. I'll keep doing results. You know, I guess I can sidebar and mention the Badahari getting himself in another bar fight situation. It's just, it's not news. You know, like, that's just, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not news for those who are American football fans. There's a kid named Johnny Manziel who he's trying to get his life around. He's decent talent in football. He, you know, kept getting himself in trouble with, you know, drinking and partying and that kind of stuff, whatever. And then he had to check into rehab, and then he checked himself out of rehab. And it's like, whenever he comes up in the news, it's, he lost this endorsement, he lost this backer, he lost this sort of thing. And it's to the point where it's like, man, it's not news anymore. I want him to turn his life around, I hope he gets serious help, but the things that are happening bad in his life are not news. I hope things get better for him. In that way, I look at Badahari, and anytime somebody says, Badahari did this, or Badahari's fan base did this, or Badahari was seen here, it's not news for me anymore. News for me is, this is who Badahari chose to be in his last fight, and this is the date. That's all I want to see. I want to see one of the better kickboxers of, you know, when I got into it, of my years following the game, one of the most talented guys in the world, even though he's at the end of it, even though he's not the in-shape Japanese kickboxing star that he was throughout a lot of the 2000s, the guy who had the KO pop to win, to beat anybody by KO, and the chin to lose to anybody by KO. That guy was an awesome fighter. That guy competing is news to me. That guy getting into some sort of situation, bar fight, whatever, that's not news. That kind of stuff just, it just comes with the territory, and I hope, wish him all the best. Hope that he picks, you know, fights. I prefer that he's fighting. I would love it if somebody signed him to like a 5-fight deal and then he had to fight like every 3 months. I want him in a position where he's got to keep working at this thing. I don't like him having those down times. Down times is where I worry something's going to happen. But historically, these kind of things have consistently happened. So we're going to go ahead and go into Bellator kickboxing card and go top to bottom. Alexandru Negrea gets a victory over Melvin Manhoef, and Melvin Manhoef came out with combinations of low kicks. One round one, Negrea just kind of looked for simple shots, tried to punch in between. It did not work for him in that round. Round two, it started to work for him a little bit more. Started the combination, he put a high kick in the end of it, started to throw consistently back with Melvin. Then a knee comes up, and then they kind of get into like a scramble. Melvin falls on the ground, and then it is wrongly called a down by Stefano, whatever his name is. I forget, Valenti or whatever, the ref that we all hate. He then calls a down wrongly the first time. Melvin Manhoef is like frustrated by it. But the second down was legit. He got caught right behind the ear, was in bad shape, fell on the ground. So Negrea gets a 10-7 round, which pretty much means all he has to do is stand up in round three and he gets the victory. And he did. He did very, very little in that third round. Negrea gets the win. He said that he doesn't mind coming up slow. Say he wants to fight the best fighters in the world. those guys aren't in Bellator. As of right now, Bellator does not have a healthy stable of guys at the 83 kgs, around 185 pounds. I couldn't remember what their official weight class is for this, but there are guys out there. There's like a Cesar Cordoba out there. They could bring in Artur Kashenko, who could fight around there if they wanted to. It's a little bit bigger, but he could do it. He's been fighting around 80. There's some guys they could bring in for Nogueira, you know, not to mention the infusion guys. We'll see more from Nogueira down the road. Big win for him just because of the platform, but we'll see if he can turn it into consistent work. Next fight, Kareem Gaji is your first Bellator and still ISKA champion, 165 pounds. So he gets a victory over Mustafa Haider. It's like I was saying before, Gaji is a talented kickboxer who's going to put on an entertaining fight with most of the people in the world. The fact that he made 165 pounds just shows that he's usually the smaller guy going against a lot of people that he fights in glory. With that said, you know, and that's not, it's not a huge weight difference, but it's weight difference enough. But he just has it. In this game, this fight, he came with a mean body kick game. Just combinations, rip the body kick hard, rip single body kicks hard. Savvy boxing, savvy movement. Haider, I think it was round two, where he kind of bit down, decided he was going to let the combinations go. He came with enough offensive flow to win that round. But then, as I was mentioning with Holtzkin, when you go into those championship rounds, what does the better fighter do? And in this case, Kareem Gaji turned it up. Rounds 3, 4, and 5 were just slaughter jobs. Like, clearly in favor of Gaji, clearly out-kickboxing him, clearly scored the more effective shots. Mustafa Haider just kind of moved around and, you know, didn't throw a lot of offense, threw something here and there, but he was clearly outscored. Adding to it, he lost a point in the fifth for holding. It couldn't have gone worse for him down the stretch, unless he, of course, was downed or knocked out. But as far as getting a decision, it didn't go his way at all in the last three rounds. Then we went to the scorecards. We went to the scorecards. Turns out, Steven was completely wrong. One of the judges had it 48-46 for Mustafa Haider, while the other two had it one-sided, I think, both 49-44, if I'm remembering correctly. The Haider card is wrong. It is wrong. There's no way that he won three rounds in this fight. Not even close. No way. I just can't think of what three they'd give him unless they wanted to give him the third was 3, 4, and 5 are so clear for me for Gaji. I just can't see what they could have seen in 1 and 2 that would make them, because, you know, at least that gets him to 47, but he loses a point, so the best that he does is could do is 46 as far as off my eye, even if you wanted to give him round one. But there's no way he won three. There's no way he won four. And there's no way he won five. So I just don't know what they were seeing there. Nevertheless, the right man won. Kareem Gaji is your champion. Gets the Bellator belt. It's not too shabby of a belt. You know, the K-1 World Grand Prix white belt is still the champion of all champion belts for me. But, like, the look of the Bellator belt, very, very solid. Raymond Daniels comes out and beats Francesco Morica. Easy work, moves around, throws a couple shots, spinning back kick to the body, delayed response. Marika actually kind of got himself to the other side of the ring before Raymond Daniels was about to try another style on a kick. Then Marika went down. Marika probably had the longest 10 count of the year so far. It's like it went to 6, then it stopped, then it went to 6, then it stopped, then it went to 8, then it stopped, then they called the fight over. But he was clearly not fighting. Like, he was trying to get deep breaths and try to position himself to, all right, go again. And next thing you know, he put his hands on the ropes and lean over. It was a clean shot. Got to his body. And worse, he had, like, you know, kind of, not won't say taunted, but kind of gave a bring it on right before it. And then Raymond Daniels came right in there. Heel to the spinning heel kick. Scored right in the ribs. You could see that Morica was in trouble. Thing moving forward, Daniels, is this. They need to get him some better guys at the weight class. Maybe they can do something with him and Gaji. They're close enough. But it's the athleticism that makes him tough. Having that karate style, that's tough. But, you know, a lot of guys from, like, France, they've fought in those kind of fights before. You know, I know the fact that Gaji's got some, you know, pants on, you know, kickboxing type rule fights because they're so actively competitive in that country. But the thing that makes Raymond Daniels different is the athleticism. He is a very, very fast twitch, very quick guy who can go out there and score consistent offense on pretty much anybody. So I'm excited to see what comes from him down the road, but he's going to need guys a little bit better than Morica. Kevin Ross, next fight in the card I'm going to talk about, is he gets a victory over Matteo Tuccini. if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It could have been Warwickshire before, but I think it's Ticini here. Kevin Ross did a good job of, you know, kickboxing. I thought that he, his boxing score is pretty good. Like, the shot location, the way he rips through the body, the way he scores those hooks around the gloves, he does a really good job of that. Came out, scored the low kicks early. Second round, he scored that. Like, I kind of played with it on Twitter, and I said that Kevin Ross has got that damn you got me again Kevin Ross type head kick. It's not this killer shin up right in the neck, like just absolutely, you know, decapitate you. It's this right when you think you're comfortable in exchange, the kick comes up and you think you're in position to block it and it comes right over your glove and it catches you and you're like, damn it. And Kevin Ross is really, really slick, really savvy, really good at scoring that kind of offense. Adding to it, he did a good job of staying poised because Matteo Ticini continued to run into the clinch, hold, punch and hold, like he was just clearly playing dirty all fight. If there's one guy, Mustafa Hayda got in trouble for holding, Ticini should have gotten in trouble for holding too, because it was clear, Kevin Ross is a full rules Muay Thai guy. If Ticini wanted to play that game, Ross would have just murdered him. This is full rules Muay Thai, this would not have been a close fight. Ticini would have probably been stopped in the first two rounds. He just kept playing a game where he was running into Ross, holding on to Ross, and Ross, to his credit, didn't play the game back. Like, he didn't pummel, didn't he just stuck his hands up, or he dropped his head under the neck and scored like some knees, but he didn't play the game of you're making it ugly, I'm going to make it ugly too. He let the ref do his job, went back to kickboxing, and I thought this was the perfect fight for him to kind of start to get his flow in terms of the level of it. He needs a couple more guys like this, not necessarily holders, but guys to kind of get him into the flow of playing kickboxing. He's a full rules Muay Thai guy. He's got to figure out this game. He doesn't get to use a lot of the tools that he's used before. He's used to getting scores on his dumps and his sweeps. He's just figuring out the kickboxing game. But good first fight in kickboxing for him. What could have been better had Ticini not been holding that much. Denise Akilholtz gets the victory over Veronica Vernucci. I think I pronounced Vernucci. And Akilholtz was one of the best fighters in the world, top five fighter in the world. She scored really good with her left hook in the first round. And in the second round, she couldn't miss a right hook. And I thought Vernucci in moments did a good job of using her length, and because she's a little bit longer than Akilholtz. And she would look to score and get in some knees. But Akilholtz just kept scoring consistently. Her boxing scoring so consistently. Too many times did I see shots score that kind of snapped Veronica's head back. And it's just Akilholtz. Good for her, because she's had a gap from kickboxing, too. Her last kickboxing match, if I'm remembering correctly, was, what? I want to say a year and a half ago. And if I'm remembering correctly, her last fight was for the Infusion title against Tiffany Von Soos, I believe. After that fight, I think she had made the announcement that she's going to prepare for the octagon, as she said at that time, saying that she's going to focus on MMA. She since had an MMA fight, and she lost the decision in that fight. But, like, she's just been training all along, and she hadn't been getting the fights like she did when she was a kickboxer. Bellator bringing her in means that they can use her for both. They can groom her MMA career, and they can keep her kickboxing. So hopefully she's the kind of athlete that they need to use 4 or 5 times a year. Got to keep her busy. That's only to her benefit that she's busy like that. So good for her, and again, she's talented, and she's got the look. She's very attractive. And speaking of which, Hesti Hergis is the Denise Nicole Akilholtz is Hergis is her full name. She's married to Hesti Hergis. I wanted to wrap this card up with talking about how cool it is that after 6 years, Hesti Hergis, it sounds like, if I saw the story correctly, he's finally cleared of all charges from the situation that he was in, where they said that he had a bunch of, that he's a, they thought he was a major like drug trafficker, and he had had this. When I first started filming the kickboxing documentary, I'm interviewing Simon Roots, and then he said they broke into his house, and then they kind of throw him on the ground, they arrested him, and his 3-year-old kid's in there crying, and he goes, "This guy, I know it." He's like, "There are bad people in this sport," he said, "but this guy, Hesti has been, he's like, he's innocent. He's like, I know this guy. It's just that he's a great dude. This guy isn't the, you got the wrong guy here." And after 6 years of still being in trouble, it sounds like he's finally cleared of all charges in the last couple weeks. So credit to Hesti Hergis, who just played the game right, just stayed patient, kept working. They allowed him to keep working during this time because he's still fighting in China and Glory and all sorts of kind of stuff, whatever. And it looked like it worked itself out. So I hope I got that story correct, because that's really, really good news for Hezzy Higgins. I wish him all the best. He's a very talented guy. Bellator wouldn't do wrong to have him, you know, in there. Not to mention Glory. Glory needs more people for Rigo Verheerven. And because of his size, Hezzy Higgins is a good option there. So good stuff. Couldn't have been happier for the guy. And I guess we will see more of Denise Kielholz and hopefully Hezzy Higgins down the road. Last thing I'm going to talk about is I'm going to break down this Japan card. Japan K1 World Grand Prix. It's going down in the Noyagoi National Stadium. It is in Tokyo, Japan. We got a tournament, 60kg tournament. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here. Koya Urobe is going to win this tournament. Why am I going to say Koya Urobe is going to win this tournament? Because for all of you who have been listening to this podcast for a while, that's one of my kids. I'm always going to go for Koya Urobe. I feel like he is one of the best fighters in the world. 60kgs, I feel he's the best fighter in the world. But let's go ahead and go down the card. Taiga against Masahiro Yamamoto. Interesting fight. Taiga, I've mentioned before. I feel like he's got the athletic tools to be successful. Like, I think he's got the tools to score consistent offense and get his hands raised. But his fight IQ isn't there. And he doesn't score consistent offense. And he'll have success with something, and then he'll abandon it to try something else. Masahiro Yamamoto, different. This is a guy who was once upon a time champion in Showtime for a little while. Talented guy, tall guy. I think that Yamamoto is going to get the victory here. I feel he's a better kickboxer. But I just think he's got the fighting IQ down better. Tochi takes on Leona Pettis. Pettis, of course, we've seen before. He is, if I'm remembering correctly, he was the one that upset Hirotaka, if I'm remembering this correctly. Could be wrong, but I think that was him. He's going to come in with his karate style. He's going to beat Toshi. He's going to beat Toshi. He's going to move all over the place. And I really think that Toshi is not bad, but not great. Like, just he's a serviceable guy to put on cards. And I really think that you're always going to see that with some of these K1 cards, guys who are local or kickboxing, who's going to keep getting that opportunity to compete. But, man, I'm not as high on him as I am on other people. I think that he is, not to say that he's not a talent, you know, not to say that he's unskilled all the way, but I just think that he's a guy who, when I see his name, the first thing I think is, oh, okay, they're just using you to fill this gap. You know, like, that's kind of what I think. So, we'll see. As far as Pettis goes, one moment, hold on, I lost track of my notes here for a second. Let me go back to them. He is a guy who they've used him before. I confused him with someone else. Pettis was used before. I expect him to get this victory. He is, you know, I feel like he's a talented dude, but I just don't feel like he's one of the better guys. Can beat the better guys, but he's not one that I would necessarily pick to win the championship every time. A guy who's a staple for them, and they've used him on local cards. That Pettis name, of course, Nicholas Pettis coming before him. So we'll see with more from him coming down the road. Sorry if you guys noticed a brief little hesitation there. I just needed to check my notes. I was actually thinking of Johannes Wolf. That was the gentleman who beat Hirotaka with the karate style. A couple months ago, whatever. Not Pettis. Pettis is the guy who's fought for them several times, and he's usually lost one here and there, but he's not a guy that you would consider a champion. Sorry, just got the names mixed up, and I had to go do my check-in. You know, it's all about fact-checking in this game. Excuse me. We move on. Hideyoshi Akedo is going to take on Fumiya Osawa. I'll go ahead and lean Osawa here, but I'm not high in either of these guys as far as being long-term talents. I have to see a little bit more of them, but I got Osawa winning this one, and then Koji is going to take on Koya Urobe. I think Koya Urobe is going to beat him, might even stop him, and that brings us to the next round of the tournament. I think Yamamoto is going to defeat Pettis. Actually, I'll switch that. I'll go Toshi to beat Pettis, and then I'm going to go Yamamoto to beat Toshi. And then I'm going to go Koyarube to beat Osawa. And then the finals, Koyarube will be your Japan 60kg tournament champion. He is by far and away the best fighter in this tournament field, in particular without his brother being in it, Hirotaka. He'll win the tournament. There's a reserve fight between Kataro Shimano and Masanobu Nobu Goshi. Goshu, I will go Shimano there. But again, I don't think if there's an injury, they're just getting in there to lose to Koyarube. I believe he is the man. Super fights. There's a great picture of him. And I made Tokuru my fighter of the year last year. I think he's got the right kind of style. I think he brings good combination flow. He brings it. Like, he's very, very talented. Got the KO power. He's got the exciting style. He'll go down, get up, come back. They say he's the star of the weight class. Like, the picture of him just has him chilling. It says, K1 champion at 55 kg. Or, K1 champion and best fighter in the world at 55 kgs. Takuru is the guy. He's going to take on Yochinchai, Sapit. Yochinchai, not Yotsenkai. Yotsenchai, we're talking a much smaller guy. Brings the savviness of a talented Thai, but it's going to come down to KO pop. That's going to be the difference in this fight. And at some period of time, Takuru is going to close the distance. He's going to let his hands go. He's going to score a down or a couple downs. I don't know if he'll necessarily get the KO, but I wouldn't rule it out because Takuru, he's coming. He's got the style, the backflip that he does off the top rope. He's just all action. You want to see him compete. I'm excited about him and his future. He's one of the stars in kickboxing. The more he fights, the better it is. Kufertex is going to defend his title against Ilias Belaid. This is the best fight of the weekend. This right here. If Ilias Belaid doesn't stay behind his earmuffs and gets his offense going quicker. The last time he fought in Japan against Masaki Nori, he waited too much, and Masaki Nori was able to build and hurt him with low kicks later because Masaki Nori, he'll keep that guard on and just look for opportunities. Belaid needs to come out like he does in his infusion fights, looking to throw consistent offense a lot. Kufertex is going to be slick and savvy, and he's going to score that left hand at some period of time. But it's important that Belaid tries to outscore him. Like, that's got to be your goal. Because Kufertex does take breaks, does sit on power shots, does play defense a little bit too long in moments. So, if Ilias Belaid can let the offense go, he could possibly be your K1 champion in the weight class. Which, of course, opens up a whole bunch of doors. A lot of people they're going to try to put against Ilias if he wins that title. But, good stuff by Ilias Belaid. Hirotaka Urabe is back in action against Polo Tabar. I think this is to wipe the taste out of his mouth for what happened in the Wolf fight. He is a champion of that weight class because of his victory over Koyarube. His last fight was not a title fight. It was just a fight that they threw on the card, and he ended up losing. It wasn't a five-rounder. It wasn't a title fight. I think this one is a title fight, so we'll see what happens with Polo Tabar. But I got to imagine Hirotaka Urabe is going to get his hands raised here. Deika Watabe against Yuichi Yamazaki in the not-so-great 70kg weight class. I'll go ahead and go Yamazaki there. And then 70kgs, we've got Shintaro Mitsukura as he takes on Kazuya Akimoto. I'll go ahead and lean Akimoto there. But in both of those cases, those 70kg matches, we're talking about guys who I do not see a future for them in the 70kg weight class. It's just too deep. And they're not even the better guys in the country, you know. So, too deep of a weight class in the world. But, not too deep for them to put on entertaining fights. So, hopefully those guys come out there, put on a show. We have a lot of fun with this card. It just kind of depends on how I'm feeling. You know, even as I talk to you guys, my jaw's loosening up. But, it's still not the most comfortable thing in the world. But, thank you for listening to my podcast. Thank you for your patience dealing with me and my verbal issues. And, I hope to the best of my ability you guys listen to these fights and you are encouraged in some way to pursue these cards, check out these athletes. The K1 event might happen at midnight, so if you're, you know, are very early in the morning, so if you're down to get up and hang with us, or if I'm feeling good, I'll be up and hanging, and go check those cards out. See some of the best fighters in the world on streams. They'll usually be posted. You follow me, follow liverkick.com. There are people who are going to be posting them out there, so thank you so much for those who follow. Get a chance to watch that Bellator kickboxing card. It happened on Spike TV. Some of the fights are online for these. The Glory fights in particular, some of them are online already. Do your best to support the kickboxing brand. Do your best. Thank you all for, you know, being a part of my kickboxing journey. God bless and have a good one. Peace.